Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you want to go to rugby heaven? Let's go back to 1987 with Squidge, with Squidge. Let's go back to 87 with Squidge.
Hey, William.
Hi.
Are you ready for something, to hear something really clever?
Ooh, like Todd Clever.
Just, are you ready to hear the name Todd Clever?
Yeah.
Todd Clever.
That's clever.
So, I'm going to introduce this podcast, but I want you first to remember who's playing Japan, playing 10 for Japan. In this very game we're going to be discussing
Japan.
Later in this.
Japan, the rugby team.
The National Rugby Union
the National
team
rugby
of,
union team of
Japan.
Japan from the year 1987.
Yes.
Yeah.
Their fly half.
Mm-hmm. The number 10 position.
Standoff, sometimes it's known.
The Japanese
actually translate the standoff is the phrase they use fly half. Like it translates directly to standoff. That's the phrase they translate.
So the fly half, number
the fly
10
position.
From the red and white team from this game we watched, Japan.
Yeah.
1987 Rugby World Cup.
Yeah. Yes, I want you to remember who that was.
Yeah, I can remember. I think I've got a name in my head.
So you'll appreciate this when I say, hurrah and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup retrospective.
That's really clever because Seiji Hirao is the name of the fly half from the Japanese rugby team from 1987 Rugby World Cup. And it sounds a little bit like, hello.
That was the joke, yes. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, it's really clever.
Hurrah and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective, the rugby podcast that is exclusively about the 1987 Rugby World Cup for now.
So, other players of the same name.
Yep. I am Robbie or Squidge, whatever you want to call me, and I'm joined as ever by
Will Owen.
Yep, thank you very much. And today we are here to discuss perhaps the most anticipated game in the history of the Rugby World Cup.
Probably the best game.
The biggest scoreline England had ever scored up until this point. The most tries and the most points they'd ever scored and their biggest winning margin up to this point ever in the history of rugby union. Bear in mind that at this point...
They invented the fucking thing.
Yep, the international game was 105 years old at this point and they'd never scored more points than they do in this shambles of a match.
It's the first time they ever scored across the 50-point barrier,
yeah,
according to the commentator, which is very impressive.
So this is England's 60-7 win over Japan from the first World Cup in 1987.
Yes, which is, as we've promised already, like probably the most anticipated and most well-known rugby match probably to have ever been played.
Since Scotland France in the 1987 World Cup.
It's true.
There's a few that are just on hard rotation in this World Cup that we all have seen many, many times.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is a game watched by 4,800 people in a cricket stadium in Sydney, which is not the country where most of the games in this World Cup are being played.
No.
But because originally, as we've discussed on past episodes, games were going to be hosted in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, games from Australia's pool were played in Australia and all the others in New Zealand.
Is that how they split it?
That was how they split it.
I didn't even realise.
So this game is played in a cricket ground in Sydney, hence why the everything's so far away because they've just plonked a rugby pitch in the middle.
Did they like get to a month before the World Cup and realise, like, oh shit, I've got an extra pool here, lads. We need to accommodate for them somehow. And then just delegate random grounds in Australia.
Well, no, because it was the whole thing of, like, Australia was due to host every game. And it was like they were going to split it between them and New Zealand until it became like, actually, lads, I haven't done the homework.
Yeah.
Can you perhaps do the presentation this week?
So this probably falls on Neil Durden-Smith and Man Who Wanks Over Pigeons and... All of that holy triad. I don't know why I said triad. Just group.
the gang. The pigeons themselves.
Yeah.
Really.
Funnily enough, just as you were talking just then, a pigeon just really looked me in the eye from outside your window, where we were recording this in your flat. And just It's perfectly, the window is perfectly eye level between me and pigeons who may be sitting there.
I had a pigeon that came and watched me play Tony Hawk whilst I had COVID.
Nice.
It kind of poked and I had a look at it. I was like, you're right. Did a little nod to the pigeon. And then I noticed the pigeon started staring through the window and looking like the eye line at the TV screen.
It's pretty cool.
And so I just like went back to playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, as I've mentioned, was what I did when I had COVID.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I got really
yeah.
into Tony Hawk's Pro Skater and pretty much stopped since.
Yeah.
I just had 2 weeks where I was really into it.
Yeah. It's what the coronavirus does to you, man. Exactly. It's one of the symptoms. It makes you stop playing Tony Hawk Pro Skater.
You just get really, really into doing the school level over and over again until you can get a high score on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was just doing that, and the pigeon was just having a nice time. And his little mate came and watched as well, and he was clearly like,
oh, nice.
Look at this guy, he's really
watch
good
pie.
At Tony Hawk now.
It's like Twitch streaming, but
exactly.
for pigeons.
Like, I invented the pigeon Twitch streaming.
Which I think is a business that's worth investing
in. I think, look, like,
Should we do something about this?
Yeah, I think it's the next obvious branch for Squid Rugby to go in. Is Squid Tony Hawk content for pigeons.
Yeah. And, like, look, we started doing some content about rugby games, but frankly, no one really cares about them.
No.
It's more skateboarding games.
Aimed directly at pigeons.
At pigeons. Yeah, the pigeons would enjoy.
Yeah.
I don't really think we generally have a market for humans, like whether
no,
that's, in rugby or otherwise, to be honest.
Yeah,
I don't think humans
think
really
it's
enjoy
it. Massively
content.
Overblown. I think the real like areas for growth within rugby at the minute are pigeon rugby.
Yeah. Look, all we know on your YouTube statistics on the subscriber numbers, we just know that the subscribe button has been clicked like 160,000 times or how many it is. We don't know if that's all by humans. It could have been pecked by pigeons.
Like, when I check the statistics, it comes out saying it's like, the channel statistics are like 92% male, 8% female, 100% pigeon.
Oh, interesting.
So, which of course is the sequel to 100% wolf, which I discussed in the previous episode.
I tell you what, I have not thought about those words together since... What episode was that we
I
talked about
remember,
that?
I can't remember, but I
That's
talked about
like
the film...
over a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the film 100% Wolf twice in one day, and I haven't thought
yeah,
about
did,
it since.
Like, that was a good anecdote.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything about that episode or 100%
no,
Wolf.
No, I think I was calling back... This is not interesting, but I think I was calling back to something that happened in 100% Wolf, and I ended up telling the story about seeing
that
it
was
twice
similar
in one
to
day
the Rugby World Cup
because it was raining. So I went back in and was like, what else is on now, because I don't want to walk outside in the
okay.
rain for 2 hours
okay
until my train. So
makes
I went
sense.
Back in and was like, oh, the only thing starting in the next like 10 minutes is 100% Wolf, which is the
yeah,
film I saw
yeah.
this morning.
Yeah,
so I saw the film 100% Wolf twice in one day, which is a cheap Australian animated movie starring Samara Weaving as a wolf.
Right, okay, yeah. Quick apology to anybody who might have listened to that episode multiple times that just knows that story
no
better than I do. No one's
times.
Listened to that multiple times. Anything.
So, should we look at the England and Japan teams
yeah,
from this game?
I think we should. Do you want to start with England?
Let's start with
maybe?
England. So they made quite a few changes, the team that played against Australia.
Yeah.
So they've obviously got a game against the USA to come up as well. And then beyond that, they'll play a team from Wales and Ireland's pool. The winner of that pool, or
yeah.
the runner-up.
The wind is the favourite at this point.
Yes. So they make a few changes knowing they've got bigger games to come. Japan were... So this is a fascinating quote that comes up in the commentary.
Yes.
Japan were described by the American team afterwards as playing hot popcorn rugby.
Okay. Tell me what you think that means.
I think it means that it's either incredibly sweet or salted, and it's never one or the other. It's never quite both things.
Yeah, okay.
No, it means it pops up, the ball's popping off the ground all the time, the ball's popping about.
I was going to say, I think it's, my view on that, my interpretation of that is that generally people quite like it, but I think it's shit.
Yes.
I'm not a fan of popcorn.
No, it's noisy and disruptive and not a good like, why would no.
just a bit overrated popcorn for me, you know. You go to the cinema a lot more, a hell of a lot more than I do. Hey we can probably agree you go to the cinema more than me.
Yes,
right?
that's fair, that's true.
When did you last have popcorn?
I can tell you when I last had popcorn.
Yeah,
when I saw the midnight screening of Avengers Endgame.
Okay.
I decided quite last minute to go to a midnight screening of it.
Yeah.
Just because I like going to midnight screenings.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The thing is,
that's
just
cool.
Like, it's
that's
quite
cool.
like a...
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like going to live... It's the closest you get to going to live gigs.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You know,
you're the first person to witness
like,
this. It's happening in front of you.
And
you know?
Because you're surrounded by the biggest fans of the thing.
That's true as well.
And
that's
like,
true as well.
I never really cared about Star Wars until I went to see Episode 7, like the first new one.
Of course.
At midnight. And in the IMAX thing, and there were like 1,000 massive Star Wars fans there, and people were like cheering and whooping, like the studio logos coming up, and like
you were the everything.
Least sweaty nerd in that whole room. Which is a first. I'm normally in the top three.
Look, you like Star Wars, but you're not like a Star Wars.
I watched the Star Wars films for most of them I hadn't seen before, and I watched them all for the first time that week beforehand.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I've not seen all of the Star Wars films. Because we weren't raised on Star Wars.
No, at all. It wasn't like a thing.
So I think any knowledge we each have of Star Wars is either through the Lego franchise.
That's it.
Organic.
I knew what happened in Star Wars because we played Lego Star Wars as kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we played through the complete trilogy.
Yeah, that's true.
As well as the one on Game Boy Advance.
I think I've seen... I reckon I've probably seen four of the original six Star Wars films, but I don't know which ones.
I remember getting in from work. Getting in from work at like 4 or 5 p.m. or something, mm-hmm. and knowing HMV closed in like half an hour.
Yeah.
And I was seeing Star Wars in like 2 days.
Right.
So I like basically ran to HMV, bought the box set, came back. This was before Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Came back and then watched like the first trilogy one night and the second trilogy the next night.
Wow, okay.
Back to back.
Yeah.
Like both days.
I know there's a lot of people who do these things like regularly, like Lord of the Rings marathons, which I wouldn't wish on people. You hate Lord of the Rings, don't you? But I mean, I don't hate Lord of the Rings. It's just way too long.
The problem is, I look like someone who likes Lord of the Rings. So people assume that I like Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
And I think I've just been entirely
for what it's worth.
Yeah.
I'd never looked at it. Granted,
but
we lived together for the
but
first
But I do.
You know,
like anyone listening to this has seen the end of the videos, right?
Yeah.
Goes, I bet they've gone, Squidge looks like someone who likes Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, yeah. I had never made that connection myself, which I hope is worth something, you know.
Thank you.
Do I look like somebody who likes Lord of the Rings? Okay.
Kinda.
Thankfully, I've never had somebody make that assumption about me, I don't think, which is fine. In fact, people often kind of assume the opposite, I think.
You definitely look like someone who's into Depeche Mode. I don't know why
Depeche Mode.
Depeche Mode. You definitely look like someone who's into Depeche Mode. Depo Mode.
If they made Personal Jesus in the Houses of Parliament, Depeche Mode.
Nice. You definitely look like someone that always puts Depeche Mode on in video games.
It's interesting. So I'm not a big fan of Depeche Mode.
No, but you
I
look
think
like
they're
it.
All right.
You
yeah,
look
I,
like
no, no,
I look like I like
with
Lord
that.
Of the Rings. You
look
I'm like
I'm fine
like
with
Depeche
that.
Mode.
Like, I don't mind Depeche Mode. Just like, as far as like 80s music goes, I'm more into like R.E.M. and U2 and stuff like that. I like Depeche Mode, you know. I can get behind the whole 80s synth stuff. It's just... I'm not
and
like
they
I don't really
wrote
care about
a handful
much.
Of really great albums.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they've
yeah.
also written utter dross.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like,
of course.
Like the comparison made in the Six Nations between them and Girls Aloud, right? Where Girls Aloud is like consistently like 7 and 8s out of 10, apart from Biology, which is a 12 out of 10, which is maybe one of the best songs ever written. And I'm serious. Whereas Depeche Mode's like highs are some of the best pop music ever.
Yeah.
You listen to the rest.
Just can't get
enough
Personal Jesus.
Yeah.
What are the other bands they did?
Their album that I have now
Violator.
Forgot the name of.
Violator, thank you. Yeah, that's a good album.
Violator's brilliant.
That's the only Depeche Mode album I know.
Yeah. But then, like, you listen to the stuff they've more recently
released. I listened to the one they released last year.
It
was
atrocious.
Crap.
I listened to that.
It was a bit self-parody-ish.
When I was writing the script for that Island Wales thing, I wanted to listen to their most recent album just in case I was wrong on saying they went off the cliff. And I was not.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're listening to the Blood and Mud Rugby podcast. should we do some DIY chat now?
No.
So, as we were saying...
We both struggled for
England
that.
England made quite a few changes to their team.
Yeah.
So, notably, in at centre continues Jamie Salmon, who is 100% Salmon.
Yes.
And... Do you want some interesting stuff about Jamie Salmon?
I would love to
know
some interesting stuff
about this
about
guy. I don't know how much you know about Jamie Salmon.
I know fuck all about Jamie Salmon.
So,
I'll level with you.
His name is Jamie Salmon.
Oh, I know that. I knew that. Yeah. That was pretty much the one thing I know. So, you know what? I can tell you three things about Jamie Salmon.
Go on.
One of them, his name is Jamie Salmon.
Yep.
The other one is that he plays rugby at centre.
Yes.
And the third one is that he's English.
Well.
Oh.
Well. We'll come on to this.
Okay.
The first thing that stood out to me, and the reason I wanted to look him up, is he's a salmon with a mullet. How often do you come across that? So he's a salmon with a mullet, right? So, Jamie Salmon is interesting. He's a really notable figure in rugby history.
Okay.
Right? For the fact he is the only man in the history of the sport to play for both England and the All Blacks.
Hold on.
Yep.
This kid played for the All Blacks.
So Jamie Salmon, playing for England in this World Cup, won 7 caps for the All Blacks.
What?
And then whilst on the Northern Tour, whilst they were playing England in Twickenham, he spoke to some people from Harlequins. He signed for them, then stayed there for how many of years? He was born in England, so he was like English qualified,
then
moved to New Zealand as a teenager. And came through the sort of New Zealand system, played all the senior rugby.
Yeah, there, became good at rugby. Yeah.
Then signed for Harlequins there, moved to Harlequins there. And yeah, 2 years later, played for England for the first time.
That's so strange. Like, don't get me wrong, Jamie Salmon wasn't terrible.
No, I thought he played pretty well in this game.
Yeah. But I didn't look at him and think, like, All Black.
No, it's one of those where you go, you are playing well in this game against a weak Japanese team.
Yeah, that's it.
And he came into his own in the second half when Japan just gave up.
Yeah. Granted, like, I am still at this point pretty bad at pointing out when somebody actually plays well in this World Cup. So
he is currently very interesting until Zach Mercer does the same thing.
That did cross my mind when he does the complete opposite, in fact.
Yeah.
And goes and plays for the All Blacks, which I hope will happen.
So his last game for England was at this World Cup, but he went on to play for Queens for quite a few years afterwards.
Okay.
Where he was apparently a huge crowd favourite. And when he'd score a try over the Tannoy, there was a familiar chant was called out. The announcer would say the same sentence each time he scored a try. And I'm going to give you 2 guesses at what that might be. What they might say when Jamie Salmon
feed the fish
scores. Nope, but it's a good guess.
The way that you say salmon
makes
me think there's a pun on a different kind of fish. So maybe something about cod. Maybe that's something that could sound like God.
Oh my God.
What's the song? Oh my God. Are they chanting to the yet to be released for another 20 years Kaiser Chiefs hit single, Oh My God?
I cannot believe it. It's actually, they ripped it off and there was a huge lawsuit about this.
Yeah.
So, when Jamie Salmon
scored
for Harlequins, they would chant, The Eagle Has Landed.
What? What is the
Did
link
he even
there?
Play for the US?
What is the link? Because we look before at Canada, where they had Spike McTavish, who they'd gone from, what was the progression there? Spider to Spidey to Spide to Spike.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Arachnid, it was originally Arachnid.
Arachnid to Spider to Spike. Yeah, that's ridiculous, isn't it? So I can only imagine that Salmon to Eagle probably has more links. It's like playing the Wikipedia game, isn't it?
I think it might be... Do eagles, you know, like they swoop down and take salmons? Like they'll pluck a salmon out of a stream.
It's tenuous.
It's really tenuous. And also, that isn't the eagle landing.
Yeah. Surely if the eagle lands and takes the salmon, that's a bad thing for the salmon.
Yeah.
That means the salmon's suffering. The salmon's about to die.
The eagle has swooped down and killed the salmon.
Yeah. That's a more accurate thing. But also, that's when he scores.
Yeah.
If he was, like, going off injured, that would be a fair thing to chant. Mm-hmm. The eagle has landed. But...
He's just... Yes, our centre's just died.
Yeah.
Let's come up with a funny chant.
Yeah, exactly. That would be much more fitting than him scoring a try. It would be much more factually accurate.
So, Jamie Salmon is still actually involved in marketing for Harlequins.
Is he?
Yeah, he works for a marketing agency that does Harlequins and a few Premier League clubs as well.
Maybe he's got a few better chants.
So he's still involved, and like his profile on the website says he's a huge supporter of Harlequins Rugby Club, and he loves them, and he loves rugby Harlequins, and he loves Harlequins,
and Harlequins
are cool in an almost cultish way. The other anecdote about Jamie Salmon,
so
we have mentioned a few times, like there's a kind of legacy around the game between England and Scotland from this year's Six Nations, the 1987 Six Nations.
Yeah, okay.
So famously, Dean Richards knocked 2 people out in that game.
Yeah, of course, it was rugby, of course.
Yeah, an incredibly brutal, bloody game.
It was a Saturday, after all.
So, after the game, one of the Six Nations, Five Nations, as it were at the time, officials spotted Jamie Salmon coming out of the referee's changing room.
What? Okay.
Okay.
Wait, what? Okay.
When challenged for this, Jamie Salmon said, I told him that if he blew up 2 minutes early, I would swap jerseys with him.
What? What does that mean? Like... So, was he used to referees blowing the final whistle early? Is that the issue?
I don't know. I think he's trying to bribe the referee to end the game 2 minutes early by saying, I'll give you my shirt.
Oh.
And then he was spotted coming out of the referee's changing room. But also, I don't know if that's what's happened.
Does the referee want Jamie Salmon's shirt as well?
Does the referee want Jamie Salmon's shirt?
Does he have a really high opinion of... Or did he have a really high opinion of himself at this point?
He was an All Black.
He was an All Black. That's a good point. They're always humble, which means... Yeah.
No dickheads policy.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
So Jamie Salmon comes in at centre, partnering Kevin Sims,
yes.
Who obviously has not yet gone on to create the video game, which he named after himself.
No, of course, of course.
We have Mike Harrison continues on the wing.
Yeah, who, as captain. Of course, still.
We also find out in this game that he was given the nickname Burglar Bill.
Yes,
we
do.
For the fact he once scored 2 interception tries in one game.
So, Burglar Bill is something that we are familiar with,
yes.
As a pop culture reference. Not pop culture, but...
Well, it was a children's book.
It was a children's book.
Which I looked this up.
Which I was very into as a kid. Like, I loved Burglar Bill. But he was kind of a... I mean, he was a burglar, but he was quite charming, I think it's safe to say, Burglar Bill. Like, he was very much the protagonist that you supported when you were a kid. You know, you don't think about the people that you're stealing from, weirdly. And he had a catchphrase, which was... I'll have that.
That's a nice so-and-so. I'll have that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a nice ball floating through the air from one player to another.
Precisely.
I'll have that.
Which is definitely not a joke I have written in my notes later on when Mike Harrison scores an interception try. But, yes. That was Burglar Bill.
I looked it up character. As well. So, Burglar Bill was published in 1979, right?
Okay.
Meaning it was only 8 years old at this point.
Yeah.
So, was it either a huge level sensation, like national deal... Or was it nicknamed given to him by a child?
Yeah, maybe. Well, I assume
because it's very much like a children's book. Like, for anyone unaware, it's a like British like
probably targeted age about 4 or 5.
Yeah,
six
like children's book
kid.
About a burglar, and the first few pages are like very repetitive of him, like saying, "Oh, that's a nice piano. I'll have that," and assume the piano, or whatever. And then he finds a baby, and he steals a baby, and then he raises the baby with Burglar Betty. Who he meets later
on. Of course.
Baby's
I forgot
mother.
About that. That's aged really
that's
badly, hasn't
it? Yeah, yeah, he steals a baby. He just steals a baby. He straight up steals a baby, man.
Mike Harrison maybe doesn't want that nickname.
I also discovered looking this up. There's a... So the book was published originally in, like, 1979.
Mm-hmm.
In, like, 2008, the author published, like, a novel prequel called The Boyhood of Burglar Bill. Which is mostly about Burglar Bill playing in local football tournaments.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah. And
like 5-a-side.
Yeah, well, like just local like age grade football tournaments in the 50s. And it's basically like apparently it's like an autobiographical story based on the author's life. Like,
oh my god!
But also explaining how he grows up to be Burglar Bill.
So basically, what's happened here? I can tell you exactly what's happened here. This author, his big hit was Burglar Bill.
Yeah.
Right? And he's had another idea that he thought, this is okay, I need a bit of name recognition.
Exactly.
Here. He's done a McCartney 4.
His publisher won't give him any interest, so he's just slapped, he's absolutely just slapped Burglar Bill on there.
He's made up a character who is pretty unique and original, because that's what you've got to do to make a good book, bro. And he's made up this unique, original, footy lad. In his teens, maybe?
It's like a 10-year-old kid.
And then it's like literally the last sentence is, and that kid grew up to become Burglar Bill.
Exactly. Like, from what I get from reading the kind of synopsis and blurb and everything, it's like he wrote Paddy Clark Ha Ha, and then was like, what if it was a prequel to The Gruffalo?
Exactly. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That Burglar Bill was he good at football? Do we know?
I think so. I think he played I think it's like an underdog, you know.
Okay,
like
I like that about him. I like that about him.
Yeah,
I hope he played in defense.
Growing up in like,
because it's like that's a nice ball. I love that.
He's a goalkeeper.
Yeah,
should have been a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mike Harrison wasn't actually a burglar, as far as we know.
No,
he was a winger who occasionally scored interception tries, so was known after a children's book.
Yeah,
they also changed the halfbacks. So Peter Williams comes in at 10, who I'd never heard of.
I'd heard of him from the fact that he played 10 in the previous England game we've done in this podcast.
I thought Rob Andrew played.
No, Peter Williams played,
I think.
I think they've each played
about.
A game. Is this England's
this second game?
Second game.
Played the USA
I have no idea in that case. It probably was Rob Andrew. But I was convinced it was Peter Williams.
Okay.
Who knows or cares, frankly, other than Rob Andrew, who we'll come on to later on in the game. But yeah, Peter Williams. What?
Yep. I mean, I don't know what's going on there.
No.
I can't tell you anything about him.
Like,
I haven't watched him.
I'm convinced that Peter Williams, there's a few things that I'm not really convinced he is familiar with.
Mm.
One of them is kicking the ball. He doesn't seem to be familiar with. Another one is the fly half position. He doesn't really understand kind of what that is. And the third one is rugby. It seems like he's never heard of rugby before.
I'm sure he was a very good player for, like, Leicester Tigers.
Yeah, oh, definitely. At, you know. No doubt. No doubt. He tore it up at Prem level.
He's got the kind of player who's probably very highly rated at the time.
Yeah.
Written all over him, but I don't see it.
No.
Looking back.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry to Peter Williams and his children. then the big change, of course, though, into the front row
of course.
Comes the one, the only, Cooch himself, Gareth Chilcott.
I love Gareth Chilcott. And, like, what I love about Gareth Chilcott, above all, is not above all, because there's so many things to love about Gareth Chilcott, but not only the fact he's an amazing, like, after-dinner speaker and doing all of that circuit and just a good person who just pops up on the television every now and then, not as a pundit or anything, but just to be Gareth Chilcott.
Yeah.
But, like, he has never stepped out of his lane.
No.
He has always
yeah,
been.
You're right.
I was a tight-head prop from the 1980s, from the Southwest. And that's all I want to be. And I love him. He's great.
He's maybe the most West Country player rugby's ever produced. And, like, the West Country is one of rugby's real heartlands in the UK. But he is maybe the most West Country person they've ever produced.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Like, he would slot in Hot Fuzz effortlessly.
100%. 100%. I first heard of Gareth Chilcott from seeing him do, like, a feature on a Sky Sports thing for Lines.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He was saying, like, oh, yeah, I went on it was a fun tour. You know, I'm not going to do the Southwest
It was a funny
out.
Tour. Yeah, I remember being funny tour.
Yeah, and stuff like that. And in talking about, you know, how much beer they got through on tour and so on, like, that he could definitely drink a skinful. Like, it was. I think it's well documented that Gareth Chilcott could drink. But and seeing him do stuff like that, so actually getting to see him play rugby was just no surprise at all.
Yeah.
Just literally exactly who I expected
him to be. Exactly the player I was expecting him to be from the legend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of those stories, we'll get onto more of those next time we cover England.
Oh, okay.
I think that pretty much covers the England team.
Yeah, I would agree.
Moving on to the Japan team, I think they stick far more with their previous lineup.
Yes.
There's a handful of changes, but they keep kind of the key players. So Horashi keeps the captaincy.
Yeah.
We have Hirao, the real standout of 10 for me last time.
Yeah. Also, Gordon Brown on the comms said that Hirao played the previous game at 12. I'm certain he
played
10. 10.
He played
yeah.
10.
Yeah, okay.
Played 10. That was made up.
Yes.
Gordon Bray, though, is really fond of Shinji Onuki, the winger.
He is. He certainly is.
Who is very much in that lineage of, like, I see him slotting into the lineage of Onozawa, who we talked about in 2011. Mm. Fukuoka's kind of taken it as well.
Yeah.
Iwata, probably most famously.
Definitely.
And there is this kind of lineage of the Japan always having a number 11 who is rapid.
And tiny.
And tiny.
Yeah,
like, slight.
Yeah. Onozawa's maybe the exception, but, like,
no, but
yeah.
Onozawa was skinny.
He was,
like,
skinny.
He was taller than
yeah,
the others,
yeah.
But he was skinny.
Yeah.
And they always just kind of, like, slip through tackles and so
yeah.
on. You see it happen a few times.
Again,
game,
underdog.
Yeah, he really slots into that kind of mould of, like, they've always had one.
I did like
time.
Inuki. He was,
I think he's fun.
Yeah, he was a slippery character, as you suggest. Like, yeah. Of course, our the player that we took a bit of a shining to was Miyamoto in the previous game, who, of course, remains in. And you mentioned Hayashi keeping the captaincy. Something interesting about him is his scrum cap. That he has the scrum cap where he's got it weirdly tied up,
and
he's got a knot that lies on his chin.
Yes, and he often chews the bottom of the thing.
Right.
He often chews, like, the string coming down.
Okay.
In his mouth.
Yeah.
As he goes. I know there's some players that have chewed. I think, like, Richard Hibbard used to chew gum during
games.
Yeah,
Adam Jones.
I suppose it's the same sort of idea.
I guess so. But every single time he was on screen, I was just taken by the
scrum cap.
It looks
weird, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it looks
weird. That it wasn't a Velcro strap. It was tied together and it rests on his chin, not even underneath.
Yeah.
Like, it was on his chin, like, just below his lip.
It's very distinctive. The other Japanese player I'd like to point out, and I know we talked about it last time, is Tsuyoshi Fujita, the hooker, who just feels like this kind of revolution. Like, so him and Brian Moore, it's interesting to see the two come up against each other, because they are by far the two hookers in this tournament who have the most ball handling skill, I think.
Yeah,
who work most as kind of like extra flanker type role.
Yeah, I looked at Fujita and just thought, like, he's a precursor to Shota Horie.
Yeah. Oh, but
you're right. Like, Brian Moore, he is around the park. Let's be honest. The thing he's best at is stamping on people at rucks. Like, he's really, really good at just getting people out of rucks and so on. Like, solid at the set piece. But he was basically the one English forward, other than Gary Rees, who could catch the ball and, like, give competent passes.
He's probably the best ball handler in that England pack.
He's very, right? very good, yeah.
And looking at him in this game, and Fujita's a different thing, because Fujita's that kind of like token player, like Shota Horie was in 2011, and Shota Horie obviously got better and became like a genuinely possibly world-class hooker as he went on for his career. But in 2011, he was a kind of novelty player. You know, like he should really be a back, but he's the wrong shape, so they put him in the front row.
Yes.
And so he kicked sometimes, and he threw like little slip
stupid
passes
out the back passes.
And,
yeah.
Whereas Brian Moore feels like a revolution in the hooker position in the way Fujita feels like a kind of like a fluke.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah, yeah. 100%. But
Brian Moore feels like, oh, this is what hookers are going to look like in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
In the same way Dane Coles did. And now every hooker is like Dane Coles was 10 years ago.
No, I think he's spot on, yeah.
I think Brian Moore felt like actually looking at this World Cup and having seen every team play now, there's not actually a hooker in this tournament who I think is as good as Brian Moore.
I probably slated Brian Moore a little bit in the previous episode. I can't remember.
And look, like,
but he's a lot better than I realised.
You look at this England pack, right? Most of them, as I said last time, are in their team to be pricks.
They're a bunch of fat bastards.
Dean Richards doesn't seem to know there's a ball.
Like, genuinely. I think Dean Richards, on all accounts, probably plays well on this game. But what he's in the team to do is punch people.
Yeah.
Like, he punches people. Like, there's a point where he gets the ball and doesn't know what to do with it. He passes it forward by about 7 or 8 metres, which is ridiculous.
I watched the second half of this game in the office with you working alongside me.
Yeah.
Squid Rugby office. You might have heard me guffaw at one point.
I did.
That was at Dean Richards' ridiculous pass 10 metres forward.
Yeah. I had to really, like, restrain myself from craning my head around to view what was on your screen. But, yes, that makes a lot of sense. So, with us having covered the two teams, can we cover the thing of just pre the kickoff?
I've got three things I want to bring up pre-kickoff.
Okay. So, but should we take it in turns?
Okay.
So, you go first. You got three.
I'm going to go first, right? Gordon Brayer's a face!
I didn't have that written down, but that's a really good point.
Gordon Bray has a face! I've never seen it! I'd never seen Gordon Bray's face. I've been hearing his voice almost literally my entire life. Like, I probably first heard Gordon Bray's voice when I was about 5 or 6, right? Actually, no, he was commentating in 95. Like, from the day I was born, I was born during the 95 World Cup, right? And I apparently watched a number of games like on our parents' knees in hospitals and so on.
So technically you did hear
Gordon Bray's voice. I've been hearing bloody Gordon Bray's voice since I was about 4 days old.
Yep.
About 4 days old.
You know what really surprises me about this? So it's not necessarily that Gordon Bray has a face, because previously I always put a face to Gordon Bray. If you asked me what does Gordon Bray's face look like, and the image that was in my head was the image of the referee on Rugby 04.
Yes.
Which is the only time that Gordon Bray would speak on that, as that he was the colour commentator to John Inverdale. And we've covered this before, but he would talk about the back row. And he would only talk when the referee is staring at the camera, smiling really creepily, and shaking his hand left and right.
I found it so weird to see this guy dressed incredibly 80s, but like smart 80s, you know, not like flares. Yeah. This guy dressed incredibly 80s, kind of handsome, like slick back, like solid haircut.
Yeah.
Like, and just be like, oh, it's Gordon Bray's voice coming out of his face.
Very strange.
I've never seen it. I couldn't.
It took me going back twice to kind of put together that that's the same guy as the commentator.
Yeah.
Rather than just a different guy with the same voice.
I have the same thing with whenever I see Nick Mullins' face.
Strange, isn't it?
And it's nothing against like Nick Mullins.
Even Miles Harrison.
Miles Harrison I'm more used to now because I've seen him often enough. But like Nick Mullins, because he pops
it's about often great every commentators.
Year.
You just associate with their voice because their voice is so like isolated and independent.
The only exception is Bill McLaren, who I always picture very clearly.
Yeah.
Like, you picture him with the thing held up to his mouth.
Yeah, 100%.
Talking into it, and you can picture how it's facing.
With his little hat on.
There's something about like the sheer warmth of Bill McLaren's voice that invites you to imagine a whole person there.
Definitely. He's very unique in that. In that respect. Yeah.
And that's nothing against the other commentators we mentioned, because as I say, I think Nick Mullins is an incredible commentator. Miles Harrison, I hold, is the best commentator out there in rugby. But you just...
Agree, yeah.
you don't picture a face going with them.
No.
And it's the reason my face pops up at the end of videos so that no one ever has that disembodied from
me. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Gotta keep them honest.
Yeah, you've got to know that I pretend to have a face sometimes. So Gordon Bray has a face, and it was really weird to me. He pops up at the start, talking on the sideline.
You see, what's interesting?
Mm.
He never seems to go to a commentary box. He seems to just sit on the sideline. I don't know if he does it during the anthems, maybe, but it's just like, it doesn't seem likely. It seems like he just sits on the sidelines. And at some point, Mark Eller, who doesn't have a face, seemingly, appears with him.
Yeah.
But you never see him on camera.
No. Nope.
Does he just stand on the sideline and commentate from the corner of the pitch? Don't know. Now, I'm going to briefly point at my notes here to you. Is your second point that?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll say that, saying as we're taking it in turns. So,
I realise now I've got 4 points.
Okay.
To cover before the kickoff.
Have you got a minor one you want to get in just quickly?
No.
Okay.
No, you go.
In that case, so Gordon Bray, when he first comes onto the television screen with his face, he mentions the fact that Japan in the previous game had played quite poorly.
Mm.
He says Japan will want to improve today. They'll certainly need to improve their goal kicking, which is always a funny thing because that's just targeting one player rather than the 15. But he points out that their sponsor, Stein Lager, has promised Japan a case for every try, as in a full case of beer, full case of lager, for every try they score, and 2 cases for every goal they score.
Mm.
So they are promising more for kicking a goal, which is easier than it is for scoring a try. Maybe we'll come back to that at some point as a statistic, but
it's an interesting case of them not really knowing. I don't know if they went, oh, they convert the try, then they'll get 3 cases.
Maybe that's it, yeah. It's like an incentive to score under the posts or something.
Yeah,
it's possibly. And Japan were 2 from 10 in the last game, so their goal kicking was very poor. So I guess it's an incentive for the goal kicker to have the motivation to kick it over.
Maybe it's just, like, they were being coached by Johnny Wilkinson. He was in charge of the Stein Lager.
Guess so, yeah. But, like, imagine as soon as they heard that promotion, if you're Hirao and you're the goal... No, in fact, it was Matsuo was the goal kicker, wasn't he? You think, God, I've got to go out and practice, like, because we want to get drunk.
And I'll tell you what, he didn't.
Nope, he didn't.
I wonder if it was, like, the Fijian football team and they were all just giggling and talking about the beer beforehand.
I genuinely think that was a bit... If the commentators are talking about the beer they're getting promised as their intro to that team, it's likely the players are as well.
But I don't know. I wonder if it was just that was a thing put out as like a marketing stunt by Stein Lager.
Yeah,
we're
possibly
talking about Stein Lager's promotions now.
35 years later. Yeah.
So it bloody worked, didn't
I really
it?
I really fancy a Stein Lager now, actually.
Yeah.
Come to that.
So the next few things do lead us into the game quite neatly.
Okay.
So the anthems happen.
Yeah.
The English anthem is just kind of shite.
It is.
It's just like a very unimpassioned anthem.
The thing I enjoy there is the point where the camera goes to the England coach and he waves at the camera.
Yes.
Like, that's a thing of like, oh yeah, we're on television.
He waves at the camera instead of singing the anthem. Like, he isn't singing.
Yeah.
So he's just like, oh, hi, how you doing? How you doing, mate?
Imagine Eddie Jones doing that.
The Japanese anthem, on the other hand, however, because at the time, and it's quite a recent cultural thing of singing the Japanese anthem. Like, it used to just be the thing that you stand and listen to it, and like, maybe there's one nominated singer, but you know, you don't sing along. And it's quite a recent thing that's come in the last sort of 10 years.
Sure.
You know, like players singing the anthems in any sport.
Mm.
So instead, none of the Japanese players sing, so they all stand in unison.
Yeah,
and because that Japanese anthem is so haunting and...
Oh, it's good.
Like, it's
I love
great.
It.
But it is that kind of like... Yeah. It's a very different spirit to most national anthems.
Definitely, yeah.
It looks like the end of a disaster, like a very somber disaster movie. And this is all the survivors looking over the corpses of the people they lost. Like,
there
it's kind
is
of like them
vibe.
All having their arms around each other and looking very sad while this intense music plays.
Yeah, hell of a way to pump yourself up before a rugby match.
Yeah. To just, you know, think on the earthquake that just happened. The other thing is the referee.
Okay.
Who is René Herque.
Okay.
Who is a Frenchman.
Okay, right? I've not looked into this.
However, my big question isn't, have you looked into it? It's, has the orphan from the musical looked into it? You know, the orphan from the musical with the red hair. So it's, would it be René Herque, and it doesn't work. It worked in my head. I haven't done it out loud. René Herque, Annie.
I'm not going to dignify
like,
this.
Do you get it? Do you see what I'm doing?
I get it.
It worked in my head, and it doesn't work out loud, and I really didn't commit to
in
it
fact,
in the way I should.
Get is the wrong word. I understand it.
You understand what I'm going for.
Yeah. Did you have another thing you wanted to address before kickoff?
No. No, it's then the Japanese, the Australian, Americans calling them hot popcorn.
Oh, yeah. And the game starts, doesn't it?
Then they start the game. Yeah.
Weird game, to be honest.
So, yeah, because you'd think from that first half that England are the team being promised two cases of lager for every shot at goal.
Right. I literally have written down, okay, we're only 30 seconds in, but I have no idea how England are going to win this.
No,
I can see no way of them doing something good in this game.
I knew before this game that England scored exactly 60 points.
Okay.
Right, and I couldn't remember how many points Japan scored.
Yeah.
But I knew they scored a lot of points.
Mm.
And so when you get like 20 minutes into this game, you're going, how? Because England look like the better team,
mm.
but they don't look like a 50-odd points, this is our best ever performance.
No. They managed to really like wear Japan down over the course of the first 4 minutes of the game.
Because Dean Richards punches every single member of their team.
Yeah, that really helps. Dean Richards definitely helped England win a lot with his right hooks. One player I really enjoy is on debut, Japan bring in Mitsutake Hagimoto at scrum half, who for the first 5 minutes absolutely shits himself every single time he gets the ball, right?
There's a point in the second half where Japan have a scrum on about the 15-metre line in the England 22, and one of the England flankers, I think it's Winterbottom, kind of flies up on him as he's taking the ball out of the base, and he just kicks it into touch. Japan had a prime attacking opportunity, and he kicks it out on the full in fear.
So, yeah, but it's interesting, because at the start of the game, that was happening every single time we got the ball. The ball was coming out of scrums, and even if nobody was anywhere near him, he would just dive past it because he wanted to like accept the tackle before anyone's even thought about it. And then there's one point where he gets absolutely nailed by Brian Moore and suddenly becomes a beast for the next 20 minutes. Like, he's suddenly just there like, yeah, Dean Richards, I'm harder than you. Like, he's running down his channel all the time and just running at all the people like three times his size just because Brian Moore really hurt him once. And suddenly she's like, oh, okay, I've got superpowers now.
He's had the worst case scenario and he's gone, that wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Do you think that's what we need to get Brian Moore out of the commentary box and down on the pitch to nail Stephen Varney?
That is it.
And see if
that's the antidote
that sorts him out.
Being like a pussy on an international rugby pitch.
Jesus, okay.
No, I'm sorry.
Kind of sorts his... You know, Stephen Varney's like, generally spend the Six Nations a bit cautious and anxious.
I do not mean what I just said about Stephen Varney, for the record.
No, I appreciate it.
He makes a lot more tackles than I do on a rugby pitch. And he plays internationally. There's also... So, I spoke before about Gordon Bray talking about the back row.
Mm.
At one point, he says, the back row are in concert together.
Yeah. It's quite a nice phrase.
Yeah, it is quite a nice phrase. But I also just had this nice image of Peter Winterbottom playing a trumpet, which was quite fun.
So about 7 or 8 minutes into the game, right, England get into the Japanese 22 somehow.
Yeah.
And they are 5 metres out. They have a penalty about, you know, like 10 metres away from the post. Mm-hmm. You know, kickable position, but 5 metres out from the line. And they decide to go for goal. Why... And I want to ask you this question. I want your best theory. Would you ever go for goal when you could just tap it, considering defence hasn't been invented yet?
Was this England had the penalty?
England had the penalty.
Yeah, so they didn't have any lager on the line either.
No.
It's a great question. Because they kick the first
They put the first three penalties. So they kick for goal. Jonathan Webb kicking, who's the fullback, who came in seemingly out of nowhere, apparently. He's from Bristol. He was seemingly unheard of, called up out of nowhere, was accountably playing right for Bristol, but wasn't the standout. And suddenly he's England's starting fullback at the World Cup and goal kicker.
Yeah.
Because Peter Williams doesn't know how to use a leg.
You're very correct about the whole thing about defence not being invented yet. But the issue is, catching the ball hasn't been invented yet either.
No, but that happens more than defence.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like, sometimes it happens by fluke that people put their hands in the right place and clap.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
they're trying to clap along with whatever the crowd are chanting, you know, the Eagle has landed, or Sunday Bloody Sunday, or whatever it is that's important at the time. They're trying to clap along with that, and accidentally a ball just lands.
Yeah. That happens. It's like a Rhythm Heaven minigame. Just kind of clapping. Yeah. And they kind of clamp on. And so Jonathan Webb instead lines up free shot to goal. And do you want to know an interesting fact about Jonathan Webb?
Yes, I do.
So Jonathan Webb was currently studying for his PhD during this World Cup.
Oh, okay.
And his finals, his kind of final like assessment for his PhD, was 3 days before the World Cup final was due to be played.
Wow.
So if England got that far, he would have had to sit it in New Zealand. He had arrangements made just in case.
Wow. That's very cool.
It happens, it wasn't, and he flew back and was able to take it back in Bristol.
Yeah.
But that was all lined up.
That's cool.
Clearly, though, his PhD was not in maths, because England keep kicking for goal when Japan are not defending.
Yeah, yeah. It's a bizarre bit of
tactics. They're occasionally tackling, but they're not defending.
Mm, yeah.
There's no organisation to their tackles whatsoever.
Speaking of tactics, by the way, there's a point...
Were there some?
Well, we'll come on to this, okay. Because... there's a point where the Japanese coach comes onto the pitch.
Yes!
Calls everyone into a huddle and starts talking to them. And the commentators say the following. So Gordon Bray says, oh yeah, the Japanese coach on the pitch, I wonder what that is. And Mark Allen then says, maybe the coach is giving them tactics. I've never seen that before.
Yep.
He says, but to a coach giving players tactical advice, I have never seen that before. And it shows.
I think it means just more like on the pitch. It's
sure.
The Raz Erasmus thing. But like,
yeah, yeah.
Also, I don't know if it's the coach or it's just a water boy coming on. And
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But still, it's still, they're sending messages on, which wasn't a thing that anyone did at the time.
Yeah.
And this is the start of something that is now like commonplace at every level of rugby.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? And it starts here in this game.
Mm.
This beloved game that we all adored so much.
Yes.
England 60, Japan 7.
Yeah.
From 1987. And it is really interesting to see because it doesn't bloody work.
No,
like the
no.
First, you'd think the first example of a coach coming
off
the pitch.
It depends. It depends what tactics he was giving him. If the tactic he was giving him was miss more tackles, then it really worked.
So the interesting thing about this as well is he calls all 15 players into a huddle
mm.
during a goal kick by England.
Yes,
right. So if Dr. Jonathan Webb
mm.
lined this up quickly, took it quickly, and missed, you know, Rory Underwood easily could have chased that and dived on it.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And bear in mind, Rory Underwood was competent.
Rory Underwood was rapid as well.
Mm.
He would have been quicker than all 15 Japanese players leaving a huddle whilst the ball was live.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
But yeah, I think it's a fascinating thing that this thing that is now ubiquitous in rugby didn't even work at the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it didn't even work the first time it was done.
Yeah,
like, this is
yeah.
really interesting. It's the first time this was happened.
Like, yeah.
There's also a point in this game where we see a dropout charge down for the first time in the Rugby World Cup.
We do.
Just like,
we
you
do.
Know, tiny things being thrown in. And it's like, oh, that's never happened in the Rugby World Cup before.
Yeah,
here's
yeah,
the first one.
Yeah, it's cool going for those statistics. Yeah, this is the first time someone called Mike has scored in the Rugby World Cup.
It wasn't. He scored in the previous game.
He's going, oh, yeah. he did. I was just trying to use an example.
First time someone called Salmon them. Scores.
It's good.
First
good
time
point.
The eagle lands.
Yeah. No eagles ever landed in the Rugby World Cup. Pigeons have landed in Rugby
no,
World Cups
like,
before.
This is the real problem with the USA team is they're all floating 2 inches off the ground.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's then a passage where Japan, after that penalty, get down the England half and they put some genuine pressure on them. Like, they pressure their exit and everything.
Yeah,
which is maybe
yeah.
the tactics they were going to be told shortly. Or maybe they've been told not to do that.
Yeah.
And they end up getting a good position, out of which they run a pretty good attack. And like Fujita handles the ball about 5 times during one passage.
Yeah, they go wide twice in the same like phase.
And Fujita keeps popping up. Like it's really nice, actually. And Harao has a hell of an eye for a gap. Like, he finds space like
the point where he
else.
Just mugs everyone off. Like everybody's expecting him to pass. It's one of those really satisfying dummies where, like the Paolo Gobbisi one, he scored off on debut against Ireland. Like one of those style ones where like everybody is expecting him to pass, apart from him.
The player he really reminds me of is Minoru Yamamoto, the Sakura 15s 10, the Japanese women's team's player.
Yeah,
they've seen like really similar players, and that they're just really individually skillful in a way that both enhances and is possibly the detriment of the team.
That. Like, yeah, yeah.
They are so skillful, they open up and find gaps.
Is she the one who wears scrum caps?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
She plays for Worcester in the Premier 15s.
Right.
And she's very good for them. She's kind of been a
She's good. She's very good, yeah.
She's excellent. And, like, Harrow reminds me an awful lot of her. They're just very similar, like, the similar build, similar sort of shape and similar style of genuinely attacking the line and calling off, like, calling off plays quite suddenly.
Sure.
Clearly having moves organised, then they'll just spot a gap and go.
Yeah, yeah.
And somehow translate that. There's a lovely moment when he throws a dummy, goes through, and clearly Japan have been running the switch behind with the two centres doing that, like, X-Factor move.
Yeah.
And he still manages to turn his body and slip it to the player running that line.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't work, but because he's just incredibly, like, naturally exuberant and skillful,
No, he's good. He has a really nice touch on him.
I banged on to watch. About him a lot the last time, but I think he's really stands out.
One of the standouts in the air, certainly in that Japan backline. Like, he's one of the few players who looks like he's seen rugby before. Better than Peter Williams.
Yes, undoubtedly.
That's for certain.
I mean, he spent time in the Premiership in England. Like, he'd been, you know, playing over
Makes
there.
Makes sense, yes. Yeah. So, about 32 minutes into the game, quite an important moment, Matsuo is given penalty between the posts. And rightfully so, you know, they're only 6-0 down. The Japanese skipper, Hayashi, decides, we'll go for goal. Seems pretty straightforward to see, doesn't it? Especially with somebody who has maybe potentially kicked a rugby ball before. You'd imagine they'll be able to get that. No. Doesn't seem like the case here, lads.
It doesn't look like he actually kicks it, is the problem.
It's genuinely the worst miss of the tournament so far.
Genuinely, when players, generally speaking, kick a rugby ball, they tend to make contact with it with their foot.
Yeah. That's the key. That's the important.
And the interesting thing about Matsu is that he takes a few shots at goal in this game, and he has the same technique for all of them. So it's clearly a decision.
Yeah.
Which is that he will try and become the rugby goal kicker whose foot has the least contact with the ball with the least force possible.
Yes.
So he barely, like, just about gently grazes the ball as he passes it.
Yep.
And the ball gets slightly off the ground each time.
Doesn't want to inconvenience the ball too much.
No, exactly.
The ball's travelled a long way to get there.
It is the kicking equivalent of an underbaked scone.
Yes. It certainly is the underbaked scone of kicks in this Rugby World Cup. I would give you that. But yeah, so he misses that, and it's horrific.
And there is no lager for the Japanese team.
No. So England kick the dropout, and it goes probably not very far, but wide. So it's on the wing, and England just go, we'll give away another penalty, why don't we? At which point Hayashi then goes, you know what?
It's
Matsuo, I trust you, bro. I trust you, man. You may have missed that kick between the posts there, but I back you. We all make mistakes. I bet that you'll get the next one. Even though it's a much harder kick, we're going to go for this. That's what it seems he says. Realistically, what he says, I want to get fucking drunk after this. And he says, go for goal again. Matsuo nails it from the touchline. And, like, it took me until the second half to realise, oh, that's what he was doing. He wants to get pissed after the game. Because, like, I wrote him down as a dick of the day for the fact that he opted to go to send Matsuo to go to goal for goal again after missing genuinely one of the worst kicks I've ever seen. And then I realised, no, he wants beer. But
because he's got such a specific approach to kicking goals.
Yeah.
The closest thing I've seen in recent times, just for kind of listeners' sake, is like Greg Laidlaw, who kind of chipped the ball a bit.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bit like that, but far softer and far like...
Yeah, I can
see
that.
He gets under it a bit more and he kind of lifts the ball up a bit. And so it's got like a very clear like arc up and down.
Yeah.
I wonder if he had a technique that is more effective from angles than straight in front. Like the
Maybe.
Way he kind of swings onto the ball. And this might be absolute bollocks.
I think it probably is, because he should still be able to get the one just in front.
Exactly. But there's something about the way he kind of swings round and just like graces and chips the ball
slightly. I guess.
But I wonder if it's like it is always heading at a diagonal angle.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of the two he misses that are very gettable and near the post. Both fade in the same way away from him.
Yeah.
In the way that when he kicks that one from the corner, it fades away from him in the same way, but having to go between the post.
Yeah.
And I think he hits all of them exactly the same. It's not like he hits one wrong and he hits the others right. I don't know. I think it's a mildly interesting thing.
Yeah, I guess. But Also, it's literally just Hayashi wanting beer, feeling thirsty, and wanting more opportunities to go for goal. So Japan kick it and they go 6-3.
You know, and Japan in the '80s, like, famously reluctant to take in other cultural stuff at this time still.
Yeah.
I wonder if just like lager was pretty hard or expensive to get hold of.
Probably.
They're probably, yeah, you know, quite excited by the thought. Like,
yeah,
you know, like very like American drink.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That they can bring in. And that might be, again, cultural bollocks, I don't know. But it's based on bits of research.
Yes, quite possibly. So there's not too much left in the first half. There's a few little bits, but
there's an outstanding moment by Renny Hirke Annie.
Yeah.
Where he awards a holding on penalty. And he does, basically, you know the bit in the room where Tommy Wiseau goes, "You're tearing me apart, Lisa."
Yes.
He just does that. He just does that. Like, he's gesturing, holding on, like he's just won a wrestling match. Like, he kind of puts his arms apart and he kind of goes, "Aah!" And, like, tears his whole body down and, like, goes down as though he's celebrating, like, a heroic win in
and
the WWE.
Immediately, Dean Richards turns to him and goes, "I did not hit her."
He looks like he's an anime character charging up an attack.
Sure. I don't actually know the instance you're referring to, but, like, I can picture it.
It really stood out to me.
Yeah.
The man in the French jumper shouting and screaming, no doubt.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's a funny moment where Mike Harrison catches a kick, then slips over and throws an intercept pass because he doesn't want to get tackled, which I think is just generally quite funny.
I think it's for actually the penalty that Matsuo hits.
Yeah.
It's for a high tackle, as Japan are regathering that dropout.
Yeah.
And the commentator says, "Oh, I don't think that's even a penalty. It definitely doesn't go high." And then I rewound it and like, oh, it's a clear red card these days. Yep. That would be an absolute red these days.
Yeah.
The other thing the commentator then says, and Mark Heller, as you say, "It must be hard for these English not to go high. The Japanese are so low to the ground."
It's a very interesting thing to say. And I think that's sadly too good a segue to ignore for the other Mark Heller thing that happens on the commentary in this game, which I have recorded here. Listener, I don't think you're ready for this.
"But isn't that flanker everywhere? Miyamoto. He seems inexhaustible.
Well, it's hard to say, Gordon. They all look the same."
No way! Mark Heller being horrifically racist on live television.
At one point, he says, Gordon Bray says, "Intercepted by a Japanese." But it's not quite the same.
Literally.
Oh my
when
God.
He said that, did you skip through that? Did you
I
miss that?
I didn't see
line?
That. I didn't hear that.
So when that happened, I literally gasped so much that my mum, who was upstairs in my house at this point, came down and asked what it was, and I had to play the clip.
How did she react?
She said, "Well, we've come a long way."
Yes, you can say that.
"I don't know, Gordon. They all look the same." And the other thing that's important,
the other thing beyond that is like, it's just shite punditry.
It is. I'm gonna play it back once more.
Okay.
"But isn't that flanker everywhere? Miyamoto. He seems inexhaustible.
Well, it's hard to say, Gordon. They all look the same."
It's horrifically offensive what he says. But the other thing is, like, it's literally in response to Gordon Bray saying, "Miyamoto's having a pretty good game." And then when Gordon Bray goes to, like, add to it, you can hear him saying, well, like, wanting to interject.
Yeah.
He was really keen to say this.
Because it'd be so easy for him to just say, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Even if he doesn't know which player is which. And it happens with commentators and pundits
and
where they don't know
the players.
If
you haven't seen much of the other team and so on,
exactly,
you mix up, like, whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, it's happened for me in this World Cup where I don't know the players, and so
exactly,
you mix them up. But
it's, it happens when, you know, you're learning new players, whatever. But you can just go, yeah, he is. He's getting around the
and
park.
And also, they don't all look the same.
Nope.
The other thing is, like, Miyamoto, the player talking about, is visibly the biggest player in the Japanese team by a long way.
He's
like,
huge.
He is the one who is hardest to mix up with the others.
The only player who looks remotely like Miyamoto in the team is Chida, the number 8.
Yeah.
He's the only other player of a similar stature to him.
Yeah. Miyamoto really stands out amongst that pack.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Japanese and team are pretty distinctive.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
They're, you know, you've got that back row of visibly huge compared to the others.
Yeah.
The props are proper prop shape, but then you've got Vegeta, who's kind of like the Shota Horie,
yeah.
like weird little guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Actually, what the only one of the back row who is like the back row stand out because they're different, slightly different
yeah,
builds.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them wearing a scrum cap and being slightly shorter. Really.
Yeah.
It's not true. It's not the case. They don't look the same.
He literally just chooses to be racist on television for the sake of it.
Yeah. Well, it is like he makes a really hard left turn into racism out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's quite extraordinary. It's...
I shouldn't laugh because it is offensive, but the fact that somebody chose to say that live.
It would be so easy to have not said it.
Yeah, that's it. And he really, really forced it out of himself.
Mm.
That as I gasped so much that I can't help but laugh at that. It's a thing that was said in commentary.
Yes. Yes, it most certainly is. I bet our real great friend Ken would love that.
He certainly would. Good old Ken Rehill. He'd be what a guy.
Absolutely all over it. Just another commentary moment I've got jotted down. And I have a couple of them.
At one point,
Gordon Bray goes, Kazuki fell over! What a shame.
Yeah,
just made me laugh.
Accurate.
And the other great thing, they're talking about Harao, who as well as being a great eye for a gap and everything, had a huge boot for a, you know, again, especially for the time, like,
sure, yeah.
He had a 50-meter punt on him. He was great.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder even more why he wasn't kicking goals.
Yeah.
And at one point, Gordon Bray says, such a big punt for such a small man, which is also how I'd describe London Irish's halfbacks. One nice. Syllable off.
Yes, one letter off. Yeah. Gordon Bray commentary highlights I have written down.
Mm.
One of them is, he's talking about how good Japan are, and then says, Japan have actually had several sessions over the last 12 months.
What we're going on this commentary thing, right? We're doing Gordon Bray tennis.
Yeah.
One point he says this player is formerly from Western Supermare. So where's he from now? Where's he from now? Where's Steve Bambridge from now? He's formerly from Western Supermare.
There's Mark Ella says, talking about Matsuo's kicking style, which you obviously summed up quite well, says that it's really important that you just stroke these balls over, you know. He says, if you force it, the ball might start doing funny things.
I'm pretty sure this sounds an awful lot like a check yourself for testicular cancer advert. Just stroke the ball gently, otherwise it might do funny things. No, in the shower, check yourself. So,
before
the other
you
thing...
yourself, make sure you do it in that order.
Please. The other thing, Gordon Bray at one point starts talking about, as I think it's John Webb's lining up a goal.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's lining up a goal anyway. It's probably bloody Japan looking for an extra pint. Starts talking about Burke Rugby Club. Right? Did you pick up on this?
No.
So he says, oh, like, there'll be a lot of people from Burke Rugby Club watching here. I want to say good luck to Burke Rugby Club. And you're like, why are you mentioning Burke Rugby Club? Then he says, my brother, of course, is captain and coach of Burke Rugby Club. And good luck. My brother is captain and coach. And it's like, Gordon Bray, no one gives a shit. Why the hell do you think we'd care that your brother
isn't
is captain
Mark Ella's
and coach?
Brother?
It's Gordon Bray, isn't it?
Oh, okay. I think it was Mark Ella.
Oh, well, that makes more sense then.
Mark Ella starts talking about it and says, I would like to wish them luck playing against their local rivals tomorrow. And Gordon Bray then just goes, I think they're going to need it. And that's it. That's the end of the conversation.
I thought it was the other way around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. Because I thought Gordon Bray was just telling us about his local rugby club. And
no.
Because it sounds like he's really boasting that his brother is captain.
You know,
my brother's captain, actually. I'm kind of a big deal of Burke Rugby Club.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, no one gives a shit. No one gives a shit. I mean, I've got it written in quite firm terms in my notes. Because I didn't think we needed to hear it from Gordon Bray.
No.
You with your face. I wonder if his brother has a body.
It's Mark Ella generally coming out with these stupid takes on commentary so far.
Yeah.
And bear in mind, I will add as well,
the thing about
after the racist thing, Gordon Bray was silent for the next 10 seconds.
The thing,
and then eventually goes, anyway, back to the rugby.
The thing about the Ella brothers is they all look the same.
Yeah, it's very true. It's very true, they do. They all look like they would enjoy Lord of the Rings.
So, I also want to bring up, right,
yep.
The English line-out.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so we've talked in the past about the USA have recently just absolutely revolutionised line-out play.
Yeah.
Right? and we've seen a complete revolution in them just waving their arms in the air. Japan do it once, one player does it. But they don't yet have the tactics of everyone waving it all at once.
Yeah, yeah.
But we've also talked about cracking the USA's lineout call.
Uh-huh.
I picked up on a bit of England's lineout call,
okay,
right?
Okay, I have one written down.
Okay.
I have that Lancashire ball is throw it to Dean Richards.
Because he's from Lancashire.
I assume there was something like that in there.
He's from Lancashire, right. Okay, that makes sense. England also call Arsenal ball, Arsenal ball. And that is throwing it to two.
Okay.
So
okay.
I figure, is it a call it to whatever football club you support?
Oh, that could support. Be it. Or cricket club. Or...
Yeah, and so it becomes a cricket club instead of Dean Richards, because he's probably more into cricket than football.
Yeah, no doubt. He's more of a cricket man. That does make sense. They each have one thing for them individually. Because I was thinking, like, is it because it begins with an L? Could that maybe mean middle?
So what I did is when I saw the Arsenal...
Because L is in middle.
Because I knew it was they threw it to two for Arsenal. I went to look up and see, did Arsenal finish second in the top division that year? That might be the lineout call. It's like, Liverpool's
one. That would have been
one.
Brilliantly intricate if that was the case.
Arsenal instead finished fourth.
Yeah, okay.
Everton won the league the year running into this, which must have been a long time ago. Football
banter.
So,
high five.
My brother's captain of Burke. Don't make fun of me. Are you captain of Burke?
Not
you, captain of Burke.
Oh,
or am I a Burke?
You're. Oh, hang on. Let's set this up again so I can slam dunk you.
Okay. Hey.
Hey, man.
Hey, did it hurt when you fell from Burke? Are you the captain of Burke?
Hero.
Are you a Burke?
Hold on. Let's do this again.
Okay. So, have you got a huge punt for such a small man?
I haven't, actually.
Right, are you the captain of Burke?
You're a Burke. Classic. Should we talk about Rory Underwood's try?
We can if you like.
It's basically... Okay, I'll sum it up as quickly as I can. I'll get close to the mic just so I can do this. Basically, Kevin Sims gets the ball, runs, and then goes, okay, what do we do in this situation where I've slightly broken through the line? Get the ball to Rory Underwood. So he just kicks it generally in the direction of Rory Underwood. Rory Underwood's fucking rapid, so he just scores.
That's it. I've got W2EF Underwood try written.
Yeah.
And likewise, for the next try England score, I've got England are boring, Winterbottom try or whatever.
Yeah. I have very similar. In fact, it's like, I don't know if I even bothered to write down
Peter Winterbottom's Williams try. Does a little dummy, offloads, and then you have
Gary Reece
Winterbottom and Gary Reece, yes, of course.
Winterbottom offloads,
into
yeah.
Link. Yeah. And was it or whatever?
Yeah, it's close enough.
But it leads us into one interesting moment for the first half.
Yeah.
Where Japan have a boot runner set.
Do they?
Yeah. And nothing comes of it because Hirao spots dummies and goes and makes a break.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I did notice that point where Hirao just starts stepping and going every single time and catches the ball.
They then receive a penalty shortly afterwards. And they set up this mad formation where everyone stood in this kind of like, they have like two waves of attack behind everyone behind the scrum half.
Yeah.
And they run this mad thing that basically ends up being a crash ball. But because they run it miles away from England, they just have to wait whilst they run this lovely pattern. But it's a really interesting shape that kind of... There's a few things Japan do in this World Cup in the way... I think a lot of Japanese rugby being so based around set moves.
Yeah.
Historically. And it being something Eddie Jones very much lent into.
Stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Something Eddie Jones very much lent into and then Jamie Joseph again. Afterwards.
Yes.
And it's something that I think rugby has generally started to steal from more and more in the professional era.
Yeah.
And there are things Japan do now that are kind of prototypes of what would go on
sure,
to be
I can see that.
Modern rugby.
Yeah.
But also in a way that is a complete coincidence.
No. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
Like, I don't think anyone's stealing from Japan. I think Japan occasionally are ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
And things don't quite land.
Even if they don't quite realise. Yeah. No, I 100% agree with you. As I say, there's trends there that kind of set into what the equivalent is in modern rugby, which is like infinitely more structured and so on. Yeah. We're more or less at half-time now, I think.
Yeah.
At half-time, they report that Glenn Webb has gone home from the Wales camp following his concussion. And just as importantly, there is a kid eating raisins in the stands and his dad steals one.
That's really cruel.
Or at least I assume it's his dad.
It's really cruel.
Yeah. It's a nice looking raisin.
Yeah.
I love that. That was not scripted.
Boggle a ball. So we get into the second half and England starts scoring tries and it's weird because none of them are any good.
They're all so boring.
Like, every try they score is boring or shit.
Even
or
the good
shit.
Ones. Even the, like, there's two, oh, no, there's, like, incredible
there's
tries.
Two really good tries.
They're both boring.
Yeah.
Like, there's a length of the field try which we'll cover later, but, like, I just looked at it and just go, all right, England, I don't care. Like,
yeah.
Have you noticed that every single game in this World Cup is basically the same when it's a battering? It's just like, The teams would be close for a little bit. Then the other team will score like 7 tries in a row without the opposition making a tackle, and that's it. And 60 points.
None of them are interesting tries. No. And all of them still feel like the team that have supposedly dominated the game and supposedly playing excellently well, according to Gordon Braver's face, are actually, they seem shite.
Exactly.
Like, I'm yet to be impressed by a single team in this World Cup.
I think
maybe Australian patches in the last game are probably the best of the teams that battered others.
Yeah.
New Zealand in that first game against Italy, I guess.
But also, I was too distracted by the Dormio man.
And the dog.
So I have written at one point, Mike Harrison break, shit tackle, offloads to Cheetah, who just runs into touch under no pressure. And just like, genuinely, he ran into touch because he got bored.
Yeah. And I mean, like, Japan actually do hold it for longer than you think in the second half. Like, sure, they get to about 50-odd minutes. And then, off first phase, they just throw it to Jamie Salmon.
Incredible your man shit by Japan.
Yeah. Jamie Salmon just, like, slipstreams his way through.
Not even that. He just catches the ball and runs in a straight line. And Japan just goes...
But it's...
Not tackling
him. That was kind of the phrase, the slipstream thing, partly because it's a water analogy and, like, salmon. Sure, but also, it felt like there was just, like, one perfect path through the defence. There's one line. If you run this line, you'll go straight through and no one will get near you because there's, a force field around it.
And also, he catches the ball and two players literally choose not to tackle him. They literally, run out of the way.
Yeah, they kind of, like cross
turn their backs,
like,
he stepped me. Oh, no. And it's like, he didn't step me.
It feels like there's, a force field wall that he's happened to hit.
Yeah, that's it. That's a good way of phrasing it. And the eagle does indeed land. Jamie Salmon. In fact, the eagle doesn't land. Jamie Salmon remains alive.
To market Harlequins for another day.
Yeah.
England then get like a pushover try as well.
Yeah.
Dean Richards diving over.
Reaches the point where even the commentators are talking about how shit Japan are.
Yeah. England do one scrum in the second half where they set up, so the nine puts the ball in. Dean Richards then breaks off the scrum and the scrum half picks it up and pops it to him. Except for the fact that he is smothered really quickly.
Yeah.
They try to do a pop back on the loop to the nine who drops the ball because no one can catch in the
I have written down, has a back row move literally ever worked? Because I'm yet to see one actually
It
work.
Works in that first game for New Zealand, and never again.
Yeah, I'm literally yet to... Like, how did it take so long for them to realise that 8 popping it to the 9 who's standing off is so much more efficient than the other way around? I know I've said this before, but...
2018, Eddie Jones said he thought back row moves were going to come back into the game.
Yeah, I mean... Look, if a good coach got hold of it, I'm sure it could. I genuinely
but the thing
don't
is,
know,
right?
Because they're cleverer than me.
They bloody haven't, have they?
No, they haven't.
It's been 4 years now. The game is different.
It was an interesting analogy of when I first started playing third team rugby.
Mm.
That we had a number 8, a big Welsh number 8, who was in his 40s, right?
Right.
And was there because, I'm playing rugby for a long time and I'm massive and very, very old school. And there was a point where... We were losing a game by about 20 points. We had 10 minutes left. I was playing scrum half, and the 10 had just called a move. And the number 8 just comes up to me and says, I've just spoken to our flanker. What you're going to do is you're going to pick the ball up and run to the right and pass it inside to the flanker. And I was like, what? I've never seen that before. And also, surely that would be a forward pass. And I thought, right, okay, I'm going to ignore the... I was a little 18-year-old scrum half or whatever. And I put the ball into the scrum and thought... Well, I'm going to go with it because he's the captain.
Yeah,
and he's told me I'm really
He's bigger than the 10.
And I did. I picked the ball up, passed it inside to the flanker who'd broken off quickly. He knew this move was happening and it was a forward pass.
Yeah, of course it was.
Forward pass wasn't given.
Okay.
He got nailed.
Yeah.
And we lost the ball. He knocked it on.
So the only time I ever remember seeing a move like that come off, twice.
Yeah.
The same thing, Joe Bierman and Sergio Parise picking up as the number 8 5
minutes
out.
The two greats.
The two best number 8s I've played the game. Both of them picking up 5 metres out and doing a behind-the-back pop pass inside.
Oh, yeah.
And Alessandro Nozzani scored on one.
Yeah, he did.
And...
Gone for the Dragons. Yeah, probably Lewis Evans.
No, I forget the flanker. He's played for the Dragons for about a season. But
okay.
I remember him if I saw him. I go, oh, it's the guy that scored that Joe Bierman try.
Right, okay, yeah.
Against maybe the Scarlets or someone.
Yeah, sure. I do remember the Parise one you're referring to, though. But... Either way, even that's using the number 8 rather than the 9.
Yeah.
But the thing is, clearly he'd seen, this used to work a lot in the 80s and so on.
Yeah.
It was 2014 by that point.
Same thing, though, when you go back to the glory days of 97.
Definitely do. But genuinely probably had, that thought of, why does no one do this anymore? Without realizing, because it's fucking stupid.
I so wish we could sit some of the people who say rugby's glory days of the 80s and 90s, sit them down and just make them watch these games.
Yeah,
because
terrible,
Jesus Christ, I barely remember them because my brain just deletes them. And so often when I'm watching these, you know, like when you're kind of, you've got like the curry cup on or something,
yeah,
you know,
you're
not really paying attention, or like,
yeah,
I'm sure,
yeah,
you know, South African listeners will probably
feel the same
about like
the
USA or
the top 14,
you know,
yeah,
like you've got a game on in the background, you tune in occasionally when something exciting happens, but
yeah,
you're kind of mostly doing other things.
Sure, yeah.
I kind of keep having the attitude watching these games.
Really,
like,
yeah.
Oh, I've got to do a bloody hours podcast on them.
It is
an
terrible
hour about this game.
I do love it though, but Kevin Sims
like,
has
I'm
tried.
Not going to talk about the Munster to lose game in any kind of professional capacity, right?
No.
And that was incredible and I was so engaged in it.
Yeah, yeah.
But this, I've got to talk about for a bloody hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kevin Sims has
Kevin
tried.
Kevin the Sims scores.
Why don't Japan bother? Is what I have written down there. Literally, it would be so much easier if you just tackle him. Rory Underwood scores another try and Richard Harding does everything he can to try and blow it by throwing a dummy and then realising, oh wait, no, I could just pass to Rory, and literally Rory Underwood stood outside me.
There's a great moment where Japan are given the penalty on the 22.
Mm-hmm.
They set a move up, they tap it, they do like three fancy passes just to give it to Miyamoto to carry, at which point the camera cuts really hard and there's just someone lying on the ground in the middle of the tunnel for the scrum bleeding as the scrum's setting over the top of them. And I don't know what happens, but I can only presume Dean Richards is involved.
Yes. What I love about that as well, on that shot, you can visibly see Brian Moore staring at him looking really pissed off at him, like, come on. And we have a scrum here. Like, I'm about to scrummage. I'm about to nail this guy in front
of me. This guy is bleeding.
Like, come on.
Out of his
come on,
face.
Get out my way.
In the tunnel of the scrum.
Yeah.
And we don't know what happened.
No.
I say, I know Dean Richards was definitely involved.
Yeah.
But otherwise.
Yeah. And that Brian Moore hated that he was stood in the way of the scrum. Could you not bleed somewhere else, mate? Miyamoto. He scores a try.
Yes.
Let's talk about this.
Absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So England are running quite a nice move. It looks like it's going to be one of the inevitable tries that just breaks
that
spirit.
Yeah. It's Reese and Harding working in tandem together.
At which point, Talma Falau, the winger, kind of pops up with the intercept, pops it off the ground superbly to Harau, who does a lovely, like, just knows exactly what needs to be done, doesn't mess about, doesn't try and do too much himself, just pops it onto Miyamoto, running onto it superbly, finishes it, scores another try after scoring last game as well.
And Talma Falau was very smart not to throw a stupid offload, as like anybody else in the World Cup clearly would have done at that point. Yeah, and Miyamoto's support line is brilliant. And yeah, he scores completely against the run of play, and I'm here for it because we like Miyamoto on this podcast.
He's great.
Yeah.
He is the real standout. I think him and Harau, the two of them combining for that try was very nice because they are the two standouts for Japan.
Emblematic of the two players who are actually giving a shit for Japan.
Well, I think, you know, there's a few of them who give a shit. They just are shit.
Yeah, that's fair. That's also, that's very, very fair. Okay, the players who are, both trying and actually have some substance to them. So, there's a point where England bring on a player called Francis Clough. And I just looked at just like, what are you doing, Francis Clough? Like,
that sounds like a novel.
It does, doesn't it?
It sounds like an indie movie.
I've never heard
like
of
Steve
Francis
Coogan's
Clough
in a supporting role.
And yes. I literally just looked up Francis Clough. He sounds so made up.
Yep.
He's so randomly generated. And like, literally, like, while that's happening, Mike Harrison scores in the background. I just don't care. Like, I'm too busy, too distracted by Francis Clough. And just like, oh, yeah, and Mike Harrison scored. But still, oh, yeah, Burglar Bill. Oh, yeah, that's his
Bogler
intercept try.
This is that's what I've got written. Bogler Ball. Which is, of course, what the baby says to Burglar Bill.
Yeah.
He says, Bogler
Ball. Bogler Ball.
Bogler Ball. Bogler Ball pops up and does Bogler Ball things.
Yep.
Bogler Ball. Bogler Balls.
Yep. He gets that. He goes,
he pops up,
goes, that's a nice looking ball.
I love that. Runs it in, under the post. Those are nice 4 points. I'll have that.
Yep. And then he scores again, straight away.
Straight away. And this is a brilliant try, even by today's standards.
It is a very good try.
This is one of these rare moments during this World Cup where you go, oh, that looks great by modern rugby standards.
Yeah, that's
it's
cool.
It's not like, you're not qualifying anything.
Yeah. So Salmon makes kind of a half break and a little switch to Webb, the fullback.
Mm.
Pops it inside to Gary Reese. And Gary Reese's timing on this is really good, I think. Because,
as
like,
is Harrison's support line. Which is superb. And I watched it back on the replay. He is constantly floating so that he can hit the line late and run that final line.
Yeah.
It's incredibly Ashton-esque.
As he comes infield at the correct time.
Yeah.
And Reese like is very unselfish with his timing on the pass. He doesn't try to do too much, doesn't try to draw in too many players, you know. He just at the right moment allows Harrison the space to run that in. It's very good.
It's excellent. It's an excellent, excellent try. And good finish and really good line.
Yeah. And he appears to land in loo roll. Do you notice that? There seems to be a big roll of toilet paper just like lying along the dead ball area.
Oh, maybe that was
he
what
lands
England
just next to.
They score thoughts.
Yeah, maybe so.
Lager versus toilet roll.
Yeah,
that's the great lockdown challenge.
Yeah, the two things people were panic buying the most. So,
I mean, the other thing is, so Mike Harrison then gets a hat-trick as well.
He does, yeah.
And he does that lovely thing where, like, the Japanese defender is hairing, the fullback is hairing it across as he's running down the wing.
Yeah.
And he kind of, like, waits, steps inside, goes across. Mm. Mark Keller says he's being the polite Englishman he is. He lets the Japanese defender get past him.
I mean, that try to skip ahead to it is really nice. That's, like, 90 metres. So Rob Andrew had just come on at this point.
No, Rob Andrew does one thing before this.
He does.
Should we talk about that thing?
Let's talk about that thing.
So England are in the 22. They're camped in the 22. They are 5 minutes out. As I said earlier, defence has not been invented yet, right?
Yeah.
So they chuck the ball back to Rob Andrew for his first touch, having just come on.
Yes.
And he goes at 48-7 up.
From a scrum five, first phase.
Scrum five, first phase, under little pressure, for a drop goal.
Why?
It gets charged down.
He, like, if he was promised a case of beer for every 3 points he scored, that would explain it. But, yeah, why? Why? You're 40 points up, Rob.
The worst thing about it as well is you kind of sense it coming. Like, as the ball goes in his hand, you're going like,
100%.
He's going to bloody go for a drop.
100%. I knew the whole time that, like, it's entirely, like, because he wants to score himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, like, it's genuinely mad that there was a point where international rugby was, like, had players like that in it. Yeah. He just completely wants to go for himself. And, yeah, he gets charged down, as you say.
Yeah.
And like, Redmond scores straight away, but
like
who cares?
That aren't as good as Ellie Kildan.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Who doesn't pass at the best of times.
But is wonderfully talented enough that she's unbelievable. Keeps getting away with it.
Yeah, yeah. And like same with like Mike Brown when like he was in England shirt, like not passing suited him.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same for Ellie Kildan, even though she's ridiculous with it. Like she takes the piss a little bit. But it does suit like that first try she scored against Ireland where she did the two steps on the two players, like that was the correct thing to do, even though she had players either side.
Yeah, the try she scored against New Zealand in the autumn, where she absolutely should have just given the simple pass.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And she just dives for herself, kind of kamikaze style.
Yeah.
And she keeps getting away with it.
Yeah, yeah.
She keeps getting away with it. One day...
Good thing she's talented.
Yeah.
Yeah, Redmond scores straight away from that. And she's like, don't care.
Then we get the Mike Harrison hat-trick.
Harrison hat-trick. So it's length of the field.
Which...
Stop 90 metres out.
Makes it officially the most tries England have ever scored in an international.
Of course, of course.
That try breaks that record.
Yes. So the ball starts with Rory Underwood being very good, delivers a pass to Rob Andrew, who's under a load of pressure, and gives a delightful ball onto Jonathan Webb. And it does really, really want to like shift that ball on. And you think like, oh, okay, he's better than Peter Williams, isn't he? Straight away, just like, oh yeah, that's what they were missing the whole game.
Oh, they've got to fly off now.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And yeah, Webb goes most of the way. Again, Reese is in support. Reese really does get around the park a lot, along with Winterbottom, who, again, they feed inside, not on the outside this time, to Harrison, who steps inside the Japanese fullback, who isn't really trying at this point, but...
No, oh, he's given up.
Yeah.
Murai comes into the line an awful lot, and then just stays there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And of course, as he grounds the ball, watch should flash up on the screen, but network news will air just after the rugby.
It's really important. We need to know. We need to be really reassured by that.
Yep. I believe that's more or less everything I have on the game.
There's a couple of moments and then the game ends.
Yeah.
We could have said that at the start. We could say that for every game.
Yep.
We've covered on this bloody podcast. Yeah, so that brings us kind of to the end of the game and kind of through all my boggler ball notes.
Yeah.
So this brings us on to finally our dick of the match and man of the day.
Yes, those two things. Where should we start? Should we do Dick of the Day first for a change?
Just do Dick of the Day first for a change.
So there's a point in the second half where Japan start getting a lot of penalties. And I very rapidly realise that the scrum half doesn't drink because he is quick tapping everything. And just the amount of times other players start looking pissed off at him. He's like, no, we want two crates of lager here. But I also then kind of realise that Hayashi got a bollocking at half time, didn't he? For the fact that he's constantly going for goal when it's not necessarily to the benefit of the team. It's just to help him get drunk afterwards. So clearly at half time he's had a bollocking. He's like, no, we need to tap every penalty instead now.
Mm.
And that's what they start doing. So that was part of it. I'm not going to give him Dick of the Day for that. I also wrote down Richard Harding for being shit. Like, because I just kind of got it in the Australia game when he did that box kick at the start of just like, that's who he is to me now.
Yeah.
And it's just pissed me off. So I just automatically have him down in Dick of the Day contention. But my Dick of the Day is big racist Mark Eller.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to argue with big racist Mark Eller. I mean, there's a handful of sort of contenders.
Yeah.
There's just a bizarre moment I don't quite understand where... So Gordon Bray gets who's playing Loosehead for England wrong. Mm-hmm. And instead of Paul Randall, who it is, and he then corrects himself later in the game because I was calling him Randall. But he says Gary Pearce, who played in the previous game.
Right.
He says, that's Gary Pearce, the French polisher.
He said that a couple of times. He also said that about Gareth Chilcott once.
What does it mean?
I don't know.
What does it mean?
Because very clearly he's English.
Yes. But I don't know if French polisher is like, or like, you know, the...
All three of the players...
The Maori sidestep being the joke.
Okay,
I don't know if it's like, oh, the French polisher's punching someone. Or if it is just he polishes the French.
It's possible.
He just goes around to, like, Vincent Clair's house.
Yeah.
Just with, like, a feather duster.
Yeah,
just polishes him.
Yeah.
Leaves. Dunno.
Good question.
I wonder that every night. Forever. So, but really, for me, I had a clear Dick of the Day, then bloody played me that Mark Eller clip.
Yeah. Who was your Dick of the Day?
My Dick of the Day was, and could still be maybe, Dean Richards.
Okay.
For Dean Richards, basically everything he does. Like, if it was Cunt of the Day, it would be Dean Richards, right? And he could be a man of the match contention for all of those other things, because he is just a prick, and his entire job on the field is basically to wear out the opposition forwards.
Yeah.
But you know that phrase of like, oh, the forwards win games, the backs start by how much?
Yeah, yeah.
Back in this era, it was only true because if you had a forward like Dean Richards, he would kill seven of the other opposition forwards, so the other backs could decide by how many points they want to score past
them. Yeah, yeah. And the opposition wouldn't have backs.
The opposition wouldn't have backs anymore, because Dean Richards... You know, he was a policeman.
Either the position's the backs, or backs is in the part of your body.
Yes. He was a policeman.
Yeah.
You know? So he could have... I don't know if it worked like in Samoa, and if you had a policeman, they could let you out if you were arrested in your party. And so he just got let out, because everything he does is basically a violent crime. So, look, Dean Richards... is contented for that. However, that's not why he was my Dick of the Day.
Mm-hmm.
My Dick of the Day is for him attempting to pass and having to do rugby things, right? Because that is not why he's in the team.
No.
Him throwing a 5 metre forward pass, not why you're in the
generous.
Team, Dean. Like, yeah. Him throwing the ball to basically his own goal line from halfway.
Yeah.
Into touch as well. We forgot that detail.
He yeah, yeah.
Touch.
Yeah, yeah.
Not why you're in the team. We don't want Dean Richards to try anything related to rugby. It's astonishing he's only just leaving a position as a head coach.
It does shock me. It does shock me that in the day and age of TMOs, he's still in charge.
Only involved because everyone's afraid of him.
Yeah, that's also true. The Dimes method.
So I think that it was Dean Richards for trying to do rugby instead of just being a hard prick.
Yeah.
But I can't. No, I'm going to stick with Dean Richards. I'm going to stick by my guns. But also, Mark Eller, what the hell?
Yeah. Man of the match time.
Mm.
I think Gary Rees is excellent. And
actually, he is, yeah.
He's somebody that, as the game kind of drew closer and closer to the conclusion, I thought, like, oh, he's probably man of the match. But, I mean, the best player on the pitch is Rory Underwood, but he touched the ball about three times. So it's not going to be him. So I'm torn between Gary Rees and who I have written down as man of the match is Brian Moore. Because, again, very good at set piece, catches the ball when appropriate, which is always, and makes a lot of good tackles and so on. Like, I just generally enjoyed Brian Moore's presence in this game. So I guess I'm going to go with Brian Moore, even though it probably is Gary Rees, but still Brian Moore.
I think that's a great shout. I think Brian Moore's a really good call. I think Brian Moore has been contention for me. I think Gary Rees is also excellent. I think you pointed out really well. As I said, Dean Richards does his job best than anyone else does their
job. Yes, very true.
Just his job is being a spiteful prick.
Yeah.
However, look, partly because I like to fear a narrative. For me, Man of the Match comes down to two players that I... Oh, so Miyamoto deserves mention.
Oh,
Miyamoto's
good.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Two players that I've previously given Man of the Match to. Jamie Salmon also, I think, has a better game than we give him credit for. Like,
okay.
I think Jamie Salmon has a good second half.
Okay, yeah.
But Jimmy Amsterdam, very solid second half, like popped up in a lot of the tries.
Mm.
However, right, two players that really stood out to me as players that I just enjoy watching in this World Cup, and I've previously given both Man of the Matches because I like them, and I'm torn between the two of them, and I wish I had a coin to hand so I could flip it between them.
Should we bring Key Money into the conversation, maybe?
Is he about? Hold on, I'm just going to check he's not on tour. Hold on.
Hey, bro.
April.
Oh, yes. P-Money. Come into the room. P-Money. Have you been hanging out with those lawyers?
Hey, bro. How you doing, bro?
I'm good, thanks, P-Money. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, bro. How's it going, bro? How's the money?
Well, personally, my money isn't... that's not the money that people have come here to listen to.
All the money in the world,
about.
Bro. All the money in the world.
Hey, all the money in the world currently belongs to, I think... Is Robbie still in the room yesterday, Robbie?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm here.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm wearing sunglasses. I can't
went to, like,
everyone.
A Premier 15s player, didn't
it? Is it Karis Williams?
Karis Williams, I think so, has it.
I wasn't sure if it had moved since.
No, because we had an update on where it began.
Oh, yeah.
We still don't know where it's still. We need a full timeline
of this, don't we?
We need this, like, written out.
We really need to get on this. We need, like, somebody to do, like, a Weebly page on this.
Yeah, that's really funny, bro.
Thanks for your money. How's your money?
Oh, it's pretty good, bro. You know, I've still got 199% of my money.
Yeah.
Pretty big fan. Yeah. I was just talking to Sonny Bill recently, bro.
Yeah.
And he was
he's got the skills, Sonny Bill.
He's got the skills, Sonny Bill. Hey. And I said to him, bro, what are you going to do? What are you going to do, bro? What are you going to do when I mar none of you, bro?
What I like is you've added a couple of extra lyrics in the last 12 years.
And what Sonny Bill said, bro, was I'm going to really take the throat out the neck of the game. Bro,
so, speaking of Sonny Bill.
Yeah, bro.
Bro, if I may. He's recently been challenged to a boxing fight with Jake Paul. Is there anybody out in the world that you would like to fight?
Yeah, bro. So the one guy I really, really do want to fight is Gary Lambert, former USA forward.
Yeah, man. Yeah, bro. Yeah.
I just think he's a prick.
I completely agree with you, P-Money.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you. I really can't. I really hate the YouTuber Gary and former USA forward and world poker champion Gary Lambert.
Yeah,
I have no reason to. No, me neither, bro. I don't even think I get like a bad vibe or energy off him at all. No, me neither, bro. But the one thing I really do think is I want to have a YouTube beef, and I'm going to have it with. Yeah, bro. I completely. Yeah, I want to have it with him. Yeah, bro. Yeah, I want to have it with P-Money. Would you mind if we just finish? Sorry, bro. Thank you. Yeah, I just really want to have it with him because he seems like someone who could definitely beat me up, but is also quite old now.
Yeah.
So it would be funny.
We'll get a lot of hits on one of your YouTube channels.
Yeah, well, I mean,
whoever wins.
No, I mean, I would get hit a lot.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
Yeah, that's a good one, bro. Good one.
P-Money, do you mind if I ask you a quick favour?
Yeah, why am I here, bro?
We need to flip a coin.
Okay.
To decide who Robbie's man of the match is, and you're familiar with England against Japan from 1987.
Oh, bro, I watched that so many times when I was a copper. You know, when I was just like when I was a one penny piece.
Yeah.
You know, then I grew up to be a bigger Pete Money.
Yeah. So, would you mind if we flip the coin?
Sure, bro. I'll do a backflip.
Okay. So, wait. Which one's which, Robbie?
So we haven't even said who they are yet.
Oh yeah.
So, my man of the match is between...
Your man of the match is heads. No, I will reflip it.
Seiji Hirao.
Okay.
Who I love watching. He's just like, he is the player in this game who gave me the most joy.
Yeah.
Like, just watching him do things and throw dummies.
I love that he's got
like...
a 50-50 when this team lost 60 points to 7.
I just don't care.
Yeah. Oh, no, I love it.
I love his energy. I love the way he plays the game. He's the player I enjoyed watching most.
Yeah.
And seeing as this World Cup doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't at all.
And his podcast matters even less.
Yep.
He's there. And the other guy, right, Mike Harrison.
Okay.
Who I think puts himself about really well, runs really good support lines, takes Inception really well, and is also Boggle a Ball. And so for the sheer value of being Boggle a Ball, I think Mike Harrison, who just stands out to me, I think he's just really hard worker.
Are we not flipping the coin?
Between those two.
Okay.
Between those two is like, just players who I thought really stands out. They're
great, bro. I think Mike Harrison's one of the best captains England's ever had.
Shut up, P-Money.
Hey, I'm not going to flip myself now, bro. You're going to have to use that. Hey, that's so rude.
Sorry,
that's
rude. I'm just bantering with you because you're my bro.
Bro, but you've got to be kind to your bros, man.
Sorry, bro. I thought it was just bants. So
it was just hurtful. It was hurtful, bro.
What's heads and what's tails, Robbie?
No, I'm just really sad, bro. I think it's important we call these things out. They've made me really upset, bro.
Okay, I apologise, P-Money. Robbie, who's heads and who's
tails? It would mean more
tails?
If you said that when you weren't laughing.
Okay. Give me a face.
I was just thinking about the fact Gordon Bray has a face. Sorry, that's
Gordon Bray has a face?
Yeah, man.
No, you're telling me Gordon Bray has a face, bro?
Yeah.
Gordon Bray has a face?
He has a head and not a tail. It's mental.
Oh my... Bro, what the absolute flip?
Right? Maybe that's something you could write into your next EP. A song about Gordon Bray's face.
Bro, I am all over that news, development. Gordon Bray has a face.
Yeah, he has a whole ass
face.
Wow,
bro.
So, Robbie, what's heads and what's tails between Harrison and Hirao?
Both of them begin in H, they can't both be heads.
Yeah,
so, Hirao will be heads and Harrison will be tails.
Okay.
Okay, bro, I'm going to do a backflip, going to get on this trampoline.
And it's tails.
Which one's that again?
So that was Hirao, I believe. Okay. Someone can listen to the recording back and tell me I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's going to be Hirao.
Sure, we'll say it's Hirao. It would have been good if one of the three of us paid attention. And look, that would be verified as well. So P-Money, before you go, thank you for coming back on the podcast.
Oh,
on your way out, could you just have a quick chat with the lawyers to verify?
No troubles, bro.
How are the lawyers, by the way?
Oh, I haven't spoken to them in a while, right? Okay. They're mostly like taking calls, doing
okay. How many
documents?
Are there now? There's loads, aren't there?
There's about 400 these days.
Yeah, they're multiplying so fast.
You know what they say about lawyers and rabbits?
Right.
They multiply like lawyers or rabbits, as the phrase
fades
together.
That is the phrase. Anyway, thanks P-Money for guesting on the podcast. It's
bro.
To have you back.
No worries.
So, thank you as well. Thank you, P-Money. Thank you, Will. Thank you, everyone else, for doing the rugby. Please join us next time when the game will be New Zealand against Argentina. New Zealand looking to close off their group, their final group game. Argentina looking to get out of that group, knowing they need to beat the All Blacks. Hugo Porter famously saying in that post-match interview, we bloody better beat them.
Yeah, no, that should be hopefully
and
a
course,
lot
of course, if Argentina don't win this, he will have gone round and bullied someone's parents for no reason.
Of course, probably an uncapped fly half. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. We are almost through the pool stage now.
We've only got a few more
to go.
Yeah.
We're most of the way through.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, we've only got like 7 or 8 games left. Wow, that is strange, but that's cool.
Yes.
Thank you for listening. And thanks, as always, to P-Money and the lawyers.
We'll see you then. Thank you very much. And once and for all, Hirao.
Hirao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.